Section D. The Act's furtherance of legitimate government interests bears upon but does not resolve the next question, whether the Act has the effect of imposing an unconstitutional burden on the abortion right because it does not allow use of the barred procedure where necessary and appropriate medical judgment for the preservation of the health of the mother. The prohibition in the Act would be unconstitutional under precedents we here assume to be controlling if it subjected women to significant health risks. In IOTE, the parties agreed a health exception to the challenged parental involvement statute was necessary to avert serious and often irreversible damage to a pregnant minor's health. Here, by contrast, whether the Act creates a significant health risk for women has been a contested factual question. The evidence presented in the trial courts and before Congress demonstrates both sides have medical support for their position. Respondents presented evidence that intact DNE may be the safest method of abortion for reasons similar to those adduced in Stenberg. Abortion doctors testified, for example, that intact DNE decreases the risk of cervical laceration or uterine perforation because it requires fewer passes into the uterus with surgical instruments and does not require the removal of bony fragments of the dismembered fetus, fragments that may be sharp. Respondents also presented evidence that intact DNE was safer because it reduces the risks that fetal parts will remain in the uterus and because it takes less time to complete. Respondents, in addition, proffered evidence that intact DNE was safer for women with certain medical conditions or women with fetuses that had certain anomalies. These contentions were contradicted by other doctors who testified in the district courts and before Congress. They concluded that the alleged health advantages were based on speculation without scientific studies to support them. They considered DNE always to be a safe alternative. There is documented medical disagreement whether the Act's prohibition would ever impose significant health risks on women. The three district courts that considered the Act's constitutionality appeared to be in some disagreement on this central factual question. The District Court for the District of Nebraska concluded the banned procedure is sometimes the safest abortion procedure to preserve the health of women. The District Court for the Northern District of California reached a similar conclusion. The District Court for the Southern District of New York was more skeptical of the purported health benefits of intact DNE. It found the Attorney General's expert witnesses reasonably and effectively refuted the plaintiff's proffered bases for the opinion that intact DNE has safety advantages over other second trimester abortion procedures. In addition, it did not believe that many of the plaintiff's purported reasons for why intact DNE is medically necessary were credible. Rather, it found them to be theoretical or false. The court nevertheless invalidated the Act because it determined a significant body of medical opinion holds that DNE has safety advantages over induction and that intact DNE has some safety advantages, however hypothetical and unsubstantiated by scientific evidence, over DNE for some women in some circumstances. The question becomes whether the Act can stand when this medical uncertainty persists. The court's precedents instruct that the Act can survive this facial attack. The court has given state and federal legislatures wide discretion to pass legislation in areas where there is medical and scientific uncertainty. This traditional rule is consistent with Casey, which confirms the state's interest in promoting respect for human life at all stages in the pregnancy. Physicians are not entitled to ignore regulations that direct them to use reasonable alternative procedures. The law need not give abortion doctors unfettered choice in their course of their medical practice, nor should it elevate their status above other physicians in the medical community. In Casey, the controlling opinion held an informed consent requirement in the abortion context was no different from a requirement that a doctor give certain specific information about any medical procedure. The opinion stated, "The doctor-patient relation here is entitled to the same solicitude it receives in other contexts." Medical uncertainty does not foreclose the exercise of legislative power in the abortion context any more than it does in other contexts. The medical uncertainty over whether the Act's prohibition creates significant health risks provides a sufficient basis to conclude in this facial attack that the Act does not impose an undue burden. The conclusion that the Act does not impose an undue burden is supported by other considerations. Alternatives are available to the prohibited procedure. As we have noted, the Act does not prescribe DNE. One district court found DNE to have extremely low rates of medical complications. Another indicated DNE was generally the safest method of abortion during the second trimester. If the intact DNE procedure is truly necessary in some circumstances, It appears likely an injection that kills the fetus is an alternative under the Act that allows the doctor to perform the procedure. The instant cases then are different from Planned Parenthood of Central Missouri versus Danforth, in which the court invalidated a ban on saline amniocentesis, the then dominant second trimester abortion method. The court found the ban in Danforth to be an unreasonable or arbitrary regulation designed to inhibit and having the effect of inhibiting the vast majority of abortions after the first 12 weeks. Here, the Act allows, among other means, a commonly used and generally accepted method, so it does not construct a substantial obstacle to the abortion right. In reaching the conclusion the Act does not require a health exception, we reject certain arguments made by the parties on both sides of these cases. On the one hand, the Attorney General urges us to uphold the Act on the basis of the congressional findings alone. Although we review congressional fact-finding under a deferential standard, we do not, in the circumstances here, place dispositive weight on Congress's findings. The Court retains an independent constitutional duty to review factual findings where constitutional rights are at stake. As respondents have noted and the district courts recognized, some recitations in the Act are factually incorrect. Whether or not accurate at the time, some of the important findings have been superseded. Two examples suffice. Congress determined no medical schools provide instruction on the prohibited procedure. The testimony in the district courts, however, demonstrated intact D&E is taught at medical schools. Congress also found there existed a medical consensus that the prohibited procedure is never medically necessary. The evidence presented in the district courts contradicts that conclusion. Uncritical deference to Congress's factual findings in these cases is inappropriate. On the other hand, relying on the court's opinion in Stenberg, respondents contend that an abortion regulation must contain a health exception if substantial medical authority supports the proposition that banning a particular procedure could endanger women's health. As illustrated by respondents' arguments and the decisions of the courts of appeals, Stenberg has been interpreted to leave no margin of error for legislatures to act in the face of medical uncertainty. A zero-tolerance policy would strike down legitimate abortion regulations like the present one if some part of the medical community were disinclined to follow the proscription. This is too exacting a standard to impose on the legislative power, exercised in this instance under the Commerce Clause, to regulate the medical professions. Considerations of marginal safety, including the balance of risks, are within the legislative competence when the regulation is rational and in pursuit of legitimate aims. When standard medical options are available, mere convenience does not suffice to displace them. And if some procedures have different risks than others, it does not follow that the state is altogether barred from imposing reasonable regulations. The Act is not invalid on its face where there is uncertainty over whether the barred procedure is ever necessary to preserve a woman's health, given the availability of other abortion procedures that are considered to be safe alternatives. Part 5. The considerations we have discussed support our further determination that these facial attacks should not have been entertained in the first instance. In these circumstances, the proper means to consider exceptions is by as-applied challenge. The government has acknowledged that pre-enforcement as-applied challenges to the Act can be maintained. This is the proper manner to protect the health of the woman if it can be shown that in discrete and well-defined instances, a particular condition has or is likely to occur in which the procedure prohibited by the Act must be used. In an as-applied challenge, the nature of the medical risk can be better quantified and balanced than in a facial attack. The latitude given facial challenges in the First Amendment context is inapplicable here. Broad challenges of this type impose a heavy burden upon the parties maintaining the suit. What that burden consists of in the specific context of abortion statutes has been a subject of some question. We need not resolve that debate. As the previous sections of this opinion explain, respondents have not demonstrated that the Act would be unconstitutional in a large fraction of relevant cases. We note that the statute here applies to all instances in which the doctor proposes to use the prohibited procedure. not merely those in which the woman suffers from medical complications. It is neither our obligation nor within our traditional institutional role to resolve questions of constitutionality with respect to each potential situation that might develop. It would indeed be undesirable for this court to consider every conceivable situation which might possibly arise in the application of complex and comprehensive legislation. For this reason, as applied challenges are the basic building blocks of constitutional adjudication. The Act is open to a proper as applied challenge in a discrete case. No as applied challenge need be brought if the prohibition in the Act threatens a woman's life, because the Act already contains a life exception. Respondents have not demonstrated that the Act as a facial matter is void for vagueness, or that it imposes an undue burden on a woman's right to abortion based on its overbreadth or lack of a health exception. For these reasons, the judgments of the Courts of Appeals for the Eighth and Ninth Circuits are reversed. It is so ordered. Justice Thomas, with whom Justice Scalia joins, concurring. I join the court's opinion because it accurately applies current jurisprudence, including Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania versus Casey. I write separately to reiterate my view that the court's abortion jurisprudence, including Casey and Roe versus Wade, has no basis in the Constitution. I also note that whether the Act constitutes a permissible exercise of Congress's power under the Commerce Clause is not before the court. The parties did not raise or brief that issue. It is outside the question presented, and the lower courts did not address it.